The first ever criminal trial of a U.S. president goes to jury.
Mother Teresa could not beat these charges. These charges are rigged. The whole thing is rigged.
Robust turnout in South Africa's election, which may unseat the party of Nelson Mandela.
I feel like the current government is quite slow in terms of implementing certain things.
And giant pandas are coming back to Washington.
I am here to say that it is official. We are welcoming giant pandas back to our nation's capital by the end of this year.
Today is Thursday, May 30th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Scott Walterman. Jurors in Donald Trump's hush money trial finished their first day of deliberations on Wednesday without reaching a verdict. Reuters correspondent Angela Johnston recaps the day for us.
They're tasked with weighing the evidence and testimony from the last 5 weeks in the first criminal trial of a U.S. president. It's unclear how long that will take.
Mother Teresa could not beat these charges. These charges are rigged. The whole thing is rigged.
Trump is charged with falsifying business documents to cover up a hush money payment to porn star Stormy Daniels shortly before the 2016 presidential election. He has pleaded not guilty and denies wrongdoing. Justice Juan Merchan instructed the 12 jurors and six alternates not to rely solely on the testimony of star witness Michael Cohen,
back up,
who said he paid $130,000 out of his own pocket to prevent Daniels from telling voters about an alleged sexual encounter with Trump. Cohen said Trump approved the payoff. Trump's lawyers have argued jurors cannot rely on a convicted felon to tell the truth. Any verdict requires unanimous agreement by all jurors, and the judge will declare a mistrial if they are unable to all agree. A guilty verdict could upend the 2024 presidential race, but not prevent Trump from running or taking office if he wins. New York Law School professor Anna Kaminsky.
So although there is a maximum sentence of 4 years in prison, it's highly unlikely that the former president would serve any time in prison. It's much more likely that there would be something like a fine and probation or a combination of those things.
Trump is expected to appeal if convicted. While Trump faces three other criminal prosecutions, they're not expected to go to trial before the election.
Reuters correspondent Angela Johnston. So let's go a bit deeper. Anna Kaminsky is a New York Law School professor and criminal defense clinic director.
Now it's all up to the jurors, right? They're now going to take their time, go through the evidence and deliberate. And whether that takes an afternoon, several weeks is yet to be seen. That's going to be up to those members of the jury.
There are 34 counts against Trump, but it's not as daunting as it sounds.
So they're making a decision about whether or not he is guilty of 34 counts of falsifying business records in the first degree. And that is all that they have to decide, is whether or not he has violated that particular law. But there are 34 individual counts all charging the same law.
But the jurors do have to come to the same conclusion.
So the jury does have to be unanimous. They have to decide with respect to each count, whether they are finding him guilty or not guilty as to each of those 34 counts. And the verdict has to be unanimous, but as to each count. So theoretically, they could find him not guilty of 33 counts and guilty of one, or the opposite, or a combination of those.
And it's possible they may not all be able to come to the same conclusion. That is what is called a hung jury.
If there's a hung jury, what's happened is the jurors have been back deliberating, and whether it's they are having an issue with one particular count, a group of counts, or all of the counts where they cannot agree to a verdict, they will send a note out to the judge indicating that. And what will happen initially is the judge will bring all of the jurors back into the courtroom and give what we call an Allen charge, where the judge will say to them, it's your duty to go back and do everything possible to come to a verdict. not telling them what verdict that should be, but saying you must go back, you must deliberate, do everything possible to come to a verdict. If they go back and do that and they still cannot come to a unanimous decision, that's where we would have a hung jury. That means that there has not been a decision either way. And if that happens, the case ends. The big issue there is that it allows the prosecutor to try the case again if they choose to do so.
Now, absent a hung jury, there are two possible outcomes. The first is not guilty.
So if he's found not guilty, what the jury is saying is that the prosecutor failed to meet their burden. They failed to prove beyond a reasonable doubt particular elements of whatever crimes they found him not guilty of, whether it's some or all of them. It's not a reflection at all with respect to the defense's case, because the defense doesn't have to put on any case. The defense didn't have any obligation to call a single witness. They didn't have to do a cross-examination. They didn't even have to do an opening or closing statement. So a finding of not guilty is the jury saying the prosecutor failed to meet their burden in this case.
The other possible outcome is a guilty verdict.
So if he was found guilty, there will absolutely be an appeal. That is just what happens in almost every criminal case, in particular with a finding of guilt after a jury trial. You will have an appeal. Appeals take time. And so this is not something that we will know the decision on before the election, certainly, maybe not even for a year or so. They really do take quite a while to have a decision with respect to an appeal like this.
Anna Kaminsky is a New York Law School professor and criminal defense clinic director. It's difficult not to talk about the political implications of this trial. The defendant is running for a second term, and his opponent is making his character an issue. In our continuing coverage of the 2024 U.S. presidential election, we take a look at the campaigning outside the New York courthouse. Here's VOA correspondent Scott Stearns with this part of the story.
For most of the last 6 weeks, Donald Trump has complained that the charges against him are political.
There's never been anything like this in the history of our country. It's a scam. It's election interference at a level that's never taken place before.
President Joe Biden's campaign has largely refrained from commenting on its opponent's trial until this week, and a Biden campaign appearance by actor Robert De Niro outside the courthouse.
When Trump ran in 2016, it was like a joke. This buffoon running for president, no, never could happen. We'd forgotten the lessons of history that showed us other clowns who weren't taken seriously until they became vicious dictators. With Trump, we have a second chance, and no one is laughing now.
Trump advisor Jason Miller says that shows Trump was right all along.
So the Biden folks have finally done it. After months of saying that politics had nothing to do with this trial, they showed up and made a campaign event out of a Lower Manhattan trial day for President Trump.
From midnight tweets to drinking bleach to tear gas.
De Niro narrates a new commercial from the Biden campaign that it says highlights Trump's, quote, increasingly unhinged and dangerous quest for power since he lost the 2020 election.
Now he's running again, this time threatening to be a dictator, to terminate the Constitution.
If I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath.
Trump wants revenge, and he'll stop at nothing to get it.
I'm Joe Biden, and I approve this message.
The Trump campaign says Biden is trying to distract voters from his own failings. Spokeswoman Caroline Levitt.
Because Joe Biden is weak, he's pathetic, he's a threat to democracy, not only with this weaponization of our justice system, but with his wide-open border invasion that is allowing a mass invasion of illegal people into this country. Terrorists, criminals, our economy is in shambles, we are heading towards World War III. Those are the issues real Americans care about.
A PBS NewsHour NPR Marist poll says a majority of American voters are not following the trial. The jury's deciding whether to acquit Trump as the first U.S. president to stand criminal trial or make him a convicted felon running for president. Scott Stearns, VOA News.
We're following these other stories from around the world. The British Parliament formally dissolved on Thursday ahead of the July 4th general election. Polls indicate Labour is expected to win over the ruling Conservative Party. All 650 seats of members of parliament are now vacant, and 5 weeks of campaigning begin to elect their successors, who will take their seats on July 9th. U.S. stocks fell on Wednesday amid further gains in Treasury yields and concern over the timing and scale of possible interest rate cuts from the Federal Reserve. The Dow dropped to its lowest level in nearly a month and closed down more than 1%. The S&P 500 shed nearly 0.75%, and the NASDAQ lost almost 0.6%. North Korea on Thursday fired a ballistic missile toward the East Sea, also known as the Sea of Japan. It comes just days after Pyongyang's failed attempt to launch a spy satellite. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken arrived in Prague on Wednesday to attend an informal gathering of NATO foreign ministers. That meeting will focus on preparations ahead of a July summit of the alliance in Washington. Earlier, Blinken pledged another $50 million, total of $135 million, in aid for Moldova and lasting U.S. support, saying the country had shown an extraordinary resilience in the face of Russian bullying and interference efforts.
That, in turn, will bolster the ability of Moldovans to resist Russian interference, to hold free and fair elections, to continue down the path to the European Union and Western integration, to create more economic opportunity.
Moldova has staunchly condemned Russia's invasion of Ukraine. NATO needs to send a sign that it will contain Russian imperialism, and every move to aid Ukraine will help do this. That's what Czech Foreign Minister Jan Lipavický said on Wednesday.
NATO is a defensive alliance. We don't want to change anything on that. On the other side, if we want to defend Europe, we are quite open in recognizing what threatening European defense. That's, in my eyes, Russian imperialism. I'm calling on other states to have a common strategy to contain Russia, and definitely every step which will help Ukraine will also help to this goal.
Lipavský said the Czech Republic backs the aim of shifting the responsibility for organizing aid for Ukraine from the so-called Ramstein Group, a group of 56 countries, to the alliance itself. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Scott Walterman. The U.S. says Israel must do more to protect Palestinian civilians in Gaza and needs to do something more to let aid in. Deputy U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Robert Wood.
The fact that Hamas's leaders and fighters hide among civilians does not lessen the requirement for Israel to conduct its operations in accordance with international humanitarian law. Israel must do more to protect innocent Palestinians in Gaza. We also have emphasized that Israel must connect its military operations to a political strategy that can ensure the lasting defeat of Hamas, the release of all the hostages, and a better future for the Palestinian people. The continued pattern of significant civilian harm resulting from incidents like Sunday's airstrikes undermines Israel's strategic goals in Gaza.
Humanitarian aid access to Gaza has been extremely limited since Israel began its military incursion into Rafah 3 weeks ago. According to the UN, famine is looming in the enclave of 2.3 million people. Ballots are being counted in South Africa after a nationwide poll that's been described as the most important in 30 years. That's because the governing African National Congress could lose its overall majority for the first time. Polls officially closed at 9 p.m. on Wednesday, though many people still in line could stay to vote. Kate Bartlett spoke to voters in two very different areas of Johannesburg about why they turned out to cast their ballots.
They came out in numbers. People of all the Rainbow Nation's different races, young and old, in leafy, affluent suburbs and impoverished townships. So keen were South Africans to exert their democratic right that polling stations were allowing people already in line to cast their ballots after the official closing time of 9 p.m. on Wednesday night. The country's Electoral Commission chief, Sy Mamabolo, told media that while he couldn't give an official figure yet, it looked like turnout had surpassed that of the last elections.
It's difficult to call until you complete the counting process. Suffice to say, it will probably be well beyond what we had, the 66% we had in 2019.
This could bode ill for the governing African National Congress, or ANC. Political commentator Tessa Dooms told VOA earlier that turnout would be key.
People have been asking me what my prediction is for this election, and I keep saying the predictions are going to be very difficult the more people show up. And I think voter turnout is the biggest predictor of how this election is going to go.
For months ahead of elections, opinion polls widely predicted the ANC would get less than 50% for the first time since it won the first democratic elections in 1994, bringing an end to white rule. However, some polls showed the ANC, which was campaigning heavily, gaining ground as Election Day approached, and President Cyril Ramaphosa said he was confident as he cast his ballot in Johannesburg earlier Wednesday.
And I have no doubt whatsoever in my heart of hearts that the people will once again invest confidence in the African National Congress to continue to lead this country.
Many voters told VOA they were angry with the government's failure to provide basic services, frequent power cuts, high unemployment rates, and political corruption scandals. 59-year-old voter Charles Burmum, who is unemployed and lives in one of Johannesburg's poorest areas, told VOA his elation at voting in the first election in 1994 has now turned to disappointment.
For the first time, I was very excited. Very excited, and I was so happy, so that our country is taking a step ahead between the previous governments that was the oppressors of the apartheid. Now we are moving into a democratic state. So now the downfall. Now we are a democratic state at the present moment, but our own. It's the oppressors now, those which we put into power.
Electoral officials said the vote went smoothly for the most part, aside from a few glitches and many voters experiencing long waiting times. Counting now begins, with results expected over the next few days. Kate Bartlett, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Madagascar is holding parliamentary elections. According to the Electoral Commission, millions of Malagasy people were eligible to vote. That's one voter saying voting is both a right and an obligation, and she went to the polls to honor that choice. The president was re-elected late last year in elections widely viewed as controversial, with a low voter turnout and boycotted by the opposition. The acrimony between South and North Korea has taken on a bit of a fraternity prank level, with the South accusing North Korea on Wednesday of sending a large number of balloons across their heavily fortified border to drop objects, including trash and excrement, calling the act base and dangerous. More on this now from Reuters correspondent Vanessa Chan.
Kim Yo-jong, the sister of North Korean leader, said the balloons were gifts of sincerity for South Koreans who, quote, cry for freedom of expression. South Korean military's Explosive Ordnance Unit and Chemical and Biological Warfare Response Team were deployed to inspect and collect the objects. Residents like Lee Soo-yoon received an alert warning them to keep away and report any sightings to authorities.
It was so creepy and scary that the balloon might have fallen because North Korea might have had a specific target.
Photos released by the South's military showed balloons with plastic bags tied to them and trash strewn around some collapsed balloons. Yonhap News Agency said some contained animal feces. Sending balloons to the North has been a tactic regularly used by South Korean activists. They are often led by defectors escaped from North Korea.
Reuters correspondent Vanessa Chan. And finally, they're coming back. China will be sending two young giant pandas to the U.S. The bears were a huge status symbol for the National Zoo in Washington. Here's Reuters correspondent Rachel Faber with the details announced by the zoo on Wednesday.
It's been just months since the zoo returned three bears to China amid heightened tensions between the global superpowers. Brandy Smith is the zoo's director.
I am here to say that it is official. We are welcoming giant pandas back to our nation's capital by the end of this year. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. The Smithsonian and the China Wildlife Conservation Association have reached a 10-year cooperative breeding and research agreement for giant pandas. Our new bears are Bao Li and Qing Bao.
The announcement follows increased engagement between Washington and Beijing, which has put the relationship on a steadier footing since hitting historic lows last year. China's ambassador to the U.S., Xie Feng, said the new panda cooperation agreement was, quote, a very good sign for U.S.-China relations.
So far, China has worked with 20 countries on panda conservation. The United States was among the first. Together, our researchers have successfully bred 17 pandas, panda cubs, and solved a number of technical challenges. The National Zoo is an important participant in the process.
China's communist government has long used panda diplomacy to enhance the country's soft power, lending the bears to zoos in various countries over the decades as goodwill animal ambassadors, including in 1972, when Beijing presented two giant pandas as gifts to the U.S. after President Richard Nixon's historic Cold War visit.
Reuters correspondent Rachel Faber. This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thank you so much for being with us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Scott Walterman.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States and Kenya are celebrating 60 years of diplomatic relations, built on the shared foundations of freedom, democracy, the rule of law, and respect for human rights. President Joe Biden recently welcomed Kenyan President William Ruto to the White House to mark this milestone and to look to the future. Together, the United States and Kenya are working to deliver on the challenges that matter most to our people's lives, declared President Biden. These include health security, economic security, cybersecurity, and climate security. President Biden lauded President Ruto's bold leadership in the area of renewable energy. Indeed, 90% of Kenya's electricity comes from clean energy.
Over 1 million homes are powered by wind energy alone. An historic Africa Green Industrialization Initiative, which you launched last year, is poised to create similar results in so many other nations, particularly in the continent.
Across the region, Kenya and America are promoting high-quality investments that lead to high standards for workers, technology, and the environment. The U.S. International Development Finance Corporation announced deals that take its portfolio in Kenya to over $1 billion, and multiple private sector deals were signed, including the Coca-Cola Company's new $175 million investment in Kenya. These and other agreements are expected to generate hundreds of millions more in economic activity. Together, Kenya and America are standing united against terror perpetrated by ISIS and Al-Shabaab in East Africa. The aggression that Russia is inflicting on Ukraine, and the violence that has toppled too many democracies both across Africa and the Americas. We stand at an inflection point in history, where the decisions we make now will determine the course of our future for decades to come, said President Biden.
I'm as optimistic and hopeful as I was those years ago when Kenya Patriots raised that new flag high in that midnight sky. Because Kenya and the United States stand together, committed to each other, committed to our people, and committed to building a better world.
A world of greater opportunity, dignity, security, and liberty for all Americans and for all Kenyans.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.